You are listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and RadioReverb.com online. Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HIV and living a healthy life. It's the HIV Hour. On today's show, we feature a rundown of the latest news and talking points about living with HIV from the Brighton area and the world at large. Also, information on Brighton's HIV organisations and some other events. Do email us at hivhour@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter at @HIV_hour and Instagram at @HIVHour. If you miss the show on a Thursday at 7 p.m, then you can listen again at 4 p.m. on Monday and at noon on Tuesday, or indeed catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on RadioReverb.com.
Hello.
Hello.
We've got a full house, haven't we? We've got a full house.
We're not in the studio today, are we? Because we've got a packed show, so we're doing a quick intro and a quick outro.
Hello and goodbye.
Quick in and out. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how is everyone? Quickly, very quickly, quick, quick, quick.
Oh, my God.
Joking.
Yeah, no. Well, how are you, Tony?
Doing all right. Doing all right, doing the London Marathon this weekend.
Oh, so, yes. Yeah. Good luck for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
good luck. Nervous.
Ooh, you'll
I've
do
got
it.
My Lycra ready.
Got your Lycra. Greased
up in my Lycra, yeah.
Yeah, lovely. Mm-hmm.
What about you, David? How's your week been?
I'm good, yeah. I went to see Giovanni Panice at the Dome, dancing his little legs off. Yeah, it was good. Lovely. Fun. Strictly come dancing. Yeah, mm-hmm. How about you, Stephen? What have you been up to?
I've been away in Newcastle, and then I've been running around since I've been back in London. So it's been pretty hectic, but all good. All good.
Yeah.
What about you, Josh?
I'm getting ready for the Beaver Conference, which is next week. So that's next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So I'm on the panel for one of them. So I'm kind of getting a bit excited about that and thinking, oh, God. Yeah. So that's all going for it, which is great. All new stuff for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for joining us on the show. We've got a couple of big interviews, haven't we? So that's why
let's get cracking. So
the first one's I interviewed Richard Angel, and this is probably a month ago, just after the Stigma March. So, and it was in Brighton, so I did a good interview with him at Terence Higgins Trust. So we've got part one and part two of his interview, and then what we've got after that, Sue?
We've got a lovely interview with Anita Sullivan, playwright. She won an award for The End of Transmission, a fantastic accolade. And I had the pleasure of talking to her about that and what she's got next on the agenda.
Yeah, just to say that Richard Angel is the new CEO of Terence Higgins Trust.
Yes,
so just to clarify that.
Yeah.
So, yes, shall we get on with the show?
HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
Welcome back to the HIV Hour. You're listening to, this is Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM. I've got the pleasure of introducing the new CEO of the Terence Higgins Trust, Richard Angel.
Hello, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, and welcome to Brighton.
Thank you for having me.
You're on a whistle-stop tour of Brighton at the moment, aren't you?
It's I am on a tour. It's not whistle-stop, it's jam-packed, I think is the right description of it. But yeah, pleased to be here. I've been down a number of times in previous roles at THT, but really pleased to be meeting with the team as the new chief exec.
Yes, fabulous. And thank you for coming on the show as well. I know
I'm a listener of the show. I'm a fan of the show. I'm a really big fan and a massive friend and just in awe of Sue and all the work that she does. I'm really pleased and thank you for inviting me.
Thank you.
Did a lovely interview with Ian as he was going out in the role, so it's a pleasure to be here. Going into the role.
Thank you, and congratulations on the new role.
Thank you very much.
How are you feeling about it?
It's amazing. I first interacted with THT when I was president of my student union, and we were running as NUS, a joint campaign with THT about sexual health, getting VAT off condoms, making HIV prevention accessible. And I met somebody from THT at the time and was like, I'd love to work for them one day. So it really is a dream come true.
Yeah. And so your background, when did you start in Terence Higgins Trust?
I joined in September 2020 in the kind of second bit of lockdown, joined as an interim head of policy and parliamentary work, and I was then moved straight on to the HIV Commission. So I was in that final secretariat team, turning all the work and the research had been done into that final product. So it would land well with the media, with the politicians, with parliamentarians, and really focus on to what we've then done since with the action plan, funding, opt-out testing and other things. But my first thing was baptism of fire of here's the HIV commission, get it finished.
Right. And you did that.
In 3 months. It was quite a, and there was a very amusing all-nighter kind of essay crisis during the process, but yeah, it was great, really good. I'm really proud of it. The commission has really stood the test of time. The report is known to lots of decision makers in this area. It's used by local and national HIV groups, both those direct in the voluntary sector, but those who might be commissioning other stuff as a reference point. And of course, off the back of it, we have the government's HIV action plan, which has a number of actions in it, and all of them align in some way to the HIV commission. Some of them are insufficient, we would argue, but it is amazing to see a government report that has directly been taken from the work that we did and drawing that out. And we've now seen Wales publish their HIV action plan, and Scotland is in the process of drawing up a HIV elimination plan. And that is all inspired by that work. So it's really
brilliant. Yeah, congratulations on that. So the march, I'm just going to say the march was on Saturday, and how did that go? Unfortunately, I couldn't make it, but...
It was absolutely amazing. We had 1,500 people. We filled Westminster Bridge. We had a drumming group that were loud and proud. It was everything we wanted it to be. It was diverse. It was inclusive. It was fun. It was fighting stigma by just being there. And, of course, the message to the outside world was about how we're here to fight stigma, how stigma can hold people back, how stigma means people don't get tested, how people means people leave care, and how stigma can be interplayed with racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia, etc. And we're here to smash down all of those barriers that stop people testing, getting treated, feeling good about themselves, and living with a virus in a way where they can live their best life.
Yeah. Do you think it's getting worse, stigma, or it's more out there, more...
I think there's always two things with stigma, is that it changes in its form and it changes in its volume. Mm. And as things progress, the nature of stigma, in a weird way, I think gets less bad. But to the person who's experiencing it, it can often be the first time. And even if it's not the first time, it feels that the wound cuts as hard as the first time. Mm. So it doesn't diminish in its power. It might be, some of the examples might be less egregious, but it doesn't, you know, a paper cut cuts really deep and can be really unpleasant, regardless of the impact it can have, and it can be really unpleasant for people. But obviously people living with HIV are more present, and because we have an aging cohort, experiencing comorbidities and using other bits of the NHS, not just going through a HIV clinic now, experiencing other things, they're more present, they're more visible. And that means that stigma can therefore be more present and more visible, because it goes with the visibility of the community. And I think understanding those two things together, that weirdly, sometimes it being more present and more visible is because we're making progress. And just knowing that it's a very two-way street with stigma. And sometimes it feels like when you're going forward, you're going back. But actually, the march of progress is taking us to one in which we can talk about
it's
that.
It's highlighted, isn't it? It's out there, and
exactly.
I mean, I looked at the THT have done that survey, haven't they? It was like 74% experiencing stigma and discrimination. So it's quite big numbers, aren't they? So it's
exactly. And what the work I've been doing at that more policy end is looking for, where are these rules in place that reinforce that stigma and hold people's lives back? So when I started at THT, you couldn't join the military if you lived with HIV, and if you were in the military and diagnosed, you were no longer medically deployable. And we've smashed that away and taking away all those barriers. There was restrictions if you were a pilot, we've got rid of those. Currently the DVLA, so you need to tell them if you're, quote, living with AIDS, and we've got them to revise that process, and they're currently going through a piece of work to radically improve their advice and make sure it's based on the latest science, not outdated stigma. So there's that rules end of it, but there's a hearts and minds end of it as well that we've got to be part of changing and confronting. So the absence of those rules that reinforce the heart of mind is really, really important, which is why reform to the blood service and all kinds of bits and pieces that we're working on are vital. But equally important is our work with EastEnders, talking to 8 million people 4 times a week about, you know, showing somebody living with HIV, not from a quote unquote at-risk group, going through telling friends. And last night he told his girlfriend Whitney, and what that meant, and you saw him go through that. He talked with his clinician about prep for his partner, and all that kind of stuff. That's really, really important. You know, seeing on EastEnders somebody talk about a woman taking PrEP when there's not one local authority in the country with more than five women on PrEP,
right,
is absolutely transformative, right? So we do that really hard end stuff of that's a problem, that problem needs to go, all the way through to being part of those big civic conversations. And you know, it's great when you get to do it through SSN and really talk into the queer community. But of course, EastEnders makes we could talk out to everybody, and that's really important.
So many people watch that, don't they? So
absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
Amazing. So your role, what's your goals in your role? Have you got any?
I've got some really exciting goals, I think. I mean, the purpose of THT for me is really clear. We're here to end new cases of HIV in the UK by 2030.
Yeah.
We could do it. We've got all the tools. If we do it, we could be the first country in the world to do it. Imagine how proud that would be. A really positive reason to be British, not jingoistic, but a really exciting thing that we can say we did something quite remarkable. And if we do it, it'll be the first time we've stopped the onward transmission of a virus without a vaccine, without a cure. And if that is not a thing to get excited about, I don't know what it is. Yeah. So first thing, we've got to end the epidemic, and we're all in on that. We're about to launch a big campaign around getting our supporters behind that vision, and we hope the listeners of the HIV Hour are going to be behind us, and I'm very sure they will be.
Yeah,
the second thing is, I've got to make sure that THT is robust, so it's here till the last person living with HIV needs us.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were the first HIV charity in Europe, inspired by the tragic events of losing Terry Higgins by his boyfriend and his friends at the time. I want to make sure we've got the resources, the strength, the resilience, the work plan to be here till the last person living with HIV. And my hope is that people will live for 80 years beyond us ending the transmissions, right? There will people who will have long and prosperous lives. I spoke on the stage at the Stigma March with Eli, who was amazing and so inspiring. He's 19, 20. You know, he will have 20 years after 2030 to be living with HIV, and the potential complications that come with that, the stigma that might, you know, the bit I fear more is that as our community gets smaller, if we end the epidemic, that stigma might become disproportionately higher because it's felt by fewer and fewer people and where they look to, and I want to make sure THT is there looking for us. So we're going to be here till the last person living with HIV needs us. Thirdly, we have got to get sexual and reproductive health to be the national priority it should be. It is not only the Cinderella sector, it's been cut beyond all belief. And it really is, can be out of sight and out of mind. When was the last time you heard somebody, I didn't get my gonorrhea test recently. Where did I go for to get my chlamydia treatment? Oh my God, I've got syphilis again, right? These are things that are not often said. And so the patient voice can be often really missing in that. And I think that's a really important place for THT, is to be the patient voice for those who use and want to use and should be using sexual and reproductive health services.
Yeah.
Sex is as natural to a human being as breathing. It often involves the consent of another human. Sometimes you can do sex on your own, but often it involves the consent of another human, unlike breathing. But it is as natural to us as humans as breathing, and we need to not, you know, in the Mpox outbreak, the advice that you could kind of abstain. It's like, ask somebody, you're asking people to hold their breath.
Yeah.
For some people, that is just not a way of working, and being able to have that in the conversation, I think, is a really remarkable place for us.
And it's just like getting that message across, isn't it? Radio Reverb. Fine. Radio Reverb. Keep doing it as well. So you've got the opt-out testing as well. That's one of the programmes, isn't it, that's really important.
I mean, this is the thing I'm probably most proud of having done already in my role, is that working with the Elton John AIDS Foundation, National AIDS Trust, and all the partners in the HIV sector that work together, from George Health Trust through to Lunch Positive, coming together and saying we need an intervention that normalises HIV testing.
Mm.
And what we've learned from it is that people who most experience health inequalities are knocking down the door of the NHS, right? They're turning up at A&E. But between them arriving at the door and getting to the specialist service, like our HIV clinicians, like our hepatitis clinicians, who often pride themselves on tackling the greatest health inequalities.
Yeah.
In between that, lots of people, lots of prejudices, lots of out of out of date views. You know, they are the public, right? The NHS recruits, rightly, from our friends, our neighbours, our local community. And they bring in with them structural racism, 1980s views of HIV, homophobia, heteronormativity, all kinds of bits and pieces, right? And what opt-out testing has done is put the test at that front door. So while you're waiting in A&E and you get your bloods taken from something else, you get an extra little vial of blood. It then gets taken to a lab. And once it's in a little test tube, it doesn't care if you're a black woman, gay man, whatever, right? The it tests you as a vial of blood. So you get that thing. And then the result don't go back to A&E, which are very busy, time-consuming, and just there to basically get you back out of A&E, right? It goes to the HIV clinician or the hepatitis clinician, and they track you down in the hospital or in the community through your GP. However, they do not stop until they found you, and they get you the care that you need in the way that you need it. And I just think us being able to jump the hurdle of all of those processes that were previously there. So, you know, particularly, apparently it's obvious I'm a homosexual. And I, if I was going to A&E and I had an immune compromised condition, I would get a HIV test pretty quickly. But we know particularly for women who present with what we would know as a indicated condition for untreated HIV, that it's often the last test they get. And too often, it's the last test too late. Yeah. And when we see people who still die of untreated HIV-related illnesses, they are so disproportionately women. And that's because the system won't see, not can't, but won't see their untreated HIV. And what we've done is taken all that human error out of the system. We've moved it from the door to the lab to the clinic, and it's transformative. Yeah. So in 300 days, we've diagnosed or re-engaged in care 400 people. That is more than we could ever imagined.
Yeah.
The fact in most of those places we're doing with Hep B and Hep C means those numbers are even higher for hepatitis, meaning the return on investment is undoubted by everyone involved. So the hardest part of the campaign to get it in more places is nobody disagrees with us, which is really infuriating in the campaign, because it's like, yeah, we should do that if we get round to it. And you're like, oh my gosh, like, that's really, really difficult, because there's a kind of silent response to that that's really hard to campaign against. But we are committed to get it in the 40 more hospitals in the 30 more areas that the government's guidance says it should be. And just that's a really important project that we're going to see through, because there's an important insight in that work and there's important outcomes for the people that we need to work with.
Yeah.
And I'm just so proud that it has found those 261 people that are newly diagnosed, 140 people returned to care, and they are so disproportionately like to be older, they like to be women, they like to be Black African or Black Caribbean. You know, it's really transformative. And those that are in that kind of traditional queer community, gay, bisexual, men who have sex with men, they're much more likely to be the latter end of that, of people who might have sex with men, maybe might have sex with men, but don't feel culturally gay or bisexual in the way that some of the traditional groups we work with do. And that's just vital for the work that we do.
And that includes stigma as well. So stigma, that's why people don't go.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
What was I going to say now? So new projects coming up. Is there anything coming up you can talk about? Or
there's some really exciting stuff that we're working on. My number one focus is this loss to care phenomenon. So when I started at THT, we broadly thought there was 5,000 diagnosed people that were no longer being seen by a HIV clinic. The year after it was 7,000, COVID had made it go up and we'd started to explore it more. We now think it's between 14 and 23,000 people that are diagnosed here in the UK but are not engaged in care. Not their fault, the challenges with the system, and they've been missing off lists and not being chased up in all kinds of ways. And some of them are have challenging issues in their lives. It's more important to pay their rent that month than be alive in 4 years' time, right? And we have to understand that, and we have to be with them on their journey. They have to determine how they engage the HIV clinic and the kind of support that they need. But what we're seeing that being really dovetailed with the isolation of COVID and how that has lingered, poverty in our community, the cost of living crisis and structural inequalities in our society. And they are challenging issues for us to deal with.
Yeah.
But that's the job now. You know, less than 5,000 in England undiagnosed, 5,500 UK wide, 14 to 23,000 diagnosed, not in care, likely to have a detectable viral load, potentially able to pass on the virus, but crucially, the virus is destroying their immune system.
Yeah.
And so for their outcomes and for the aspirations for the community, we have got to get there. the community and HIV organisations have traditionally been focused on that wonderful goal of let's find everyone, let's get them diagnosed. And at the moment, it feels that the blanket can either cover our head or our toes. The more we kind of, you know, cover our head and we find the undiagnosed, we're exposing the system with the diagnosed. And we've got a really important piece of work going forward that will hopefully turn that dial.
Oh, brilliant. So good. We're coming to the end of the interview now, but so good. What do you like to do to relax? Just talk about something else.
The theatre. My absolute favourite thing in the whole world is going to the theatre. Nothing makes me feel both more alive and more rested than going to the theatre and seeing performers who have skills that I do not have. You know, I would love to be able to sing, but to the annoyance of my partner and my dog. But, you know, just seeing people in live theatre express themselves. And we've seen in recent years some of the most beautiful expressions of people tell their story about HIV or their relationship with HIV. I've been lucky to kind of get to do it for work as well as do it for home and relaxation. I just really enjoy it. And our patron, Beverly Knight, is in Sylvia at the Old Vic currently, which is about Sylvia Pankhurst, the suffragette, who split with her mother and her ways of working. And it's just amazing. You come out of it and your hands are stinging because you've been clapping so much. Yeah, and it was just beautiful.
It makes you feel good, doesn't it, that musical, doesn't it? It gives you that feel-good factor.
Absolutely.
So you've chosen a song to play, which is... thank you for doing that. Could you just tell us a little bit about it and why you chose it?
So This Was Me is the one song that was added to the Jamie musical when it went from being on stage to being in the Amazon Prime version. And it is a homage to the drag queens in particular, who fought the early days of the AIDS crisis, who did the fundraisers, who went into the AIDS wards, that went to cheer people up and perform for people that so disproportionately were impacted by the early days of the crisis. And in my previous role at THT, I led our 40th anniversary work, and I got to meet our heroes. You know, Rupert, who was Terry's partner in 1982, and the work that he has done since. Martin, who used his home phone number in 1983 to be what we now call THT Direct and our helpline, a totally ridiculous thing to do from anyone's like personal safety point of view, but he did it regardless. The amazing people that have worked, volunteered and helped, not just THT, but George House Trust here in Brighton, OxAIDS, the myriad of organisations that make up the HIV community. And I just think that testimony to them is really beautiful. And also it seeks to make a generational handover to that young Jamie coming through without necessarily the same burden of HIV in his life, but knowing that our forebears literally fought for what we have today. And I love that sense of homage and passing of the baton. This Was Me.
Yeah, This Is Me by Holly Johnson. We'd love to have Holly Johnson on the show, actually. I'd love to get him on. But This Is Me. Very passionate. Thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you very much. Good luck with what you do. I love the HIV Hour, and it's so important that the HIV is there, positively helping to change hearts and minds.
Keep it up.
Yeah,
thanks, Richard. Thank you very much. Let me tell you how it
used to go. Hey everybody, welcome back to the HIV Hour. And that was This Is Me by Holly Johnson. It was a song that was picked by Richard Angel, the new CEO of Terence Higgins Trust.
Yeah, great stuff. Great interview, wasn't it? I mean, he's very passionate, isn't he?
Very.
Can't wait to see what he's going to do with the Terence Higgins Trust. I think it's going to be great.
I think it is. I've got a great feeling that, you know, whatever, you know, the last Ian Green left, he certainly jumped straight into a massive boot. So,
So the next interview, so you did with this lady.
Anissa Sullivan. Yes, I mean, I don't think she realised how big it was going to get. And on the playwright is on how she talks about the virus, you know, and it's really, really clever. And it's so amazing she got put forward, but not just one award, for two awards. So great accolades, and you know, for her portfolio on what she wants to do in the future. So yes, she talked about how she put it together, the inspiration behind it, and the amazing people that took part in the actual, you know, there's some quite great people that, you know, took part. Yes, you know, Stephen took part in it, and I believe, yeah, no one else from this now. Stephen took part in it, and a few other positive voices from the Terence Sickens Shop took part in it. And you see, you'll hear the different voices of people living with HIV. So amazing.
Yeah, brilliant. Shall we listen to it?
Shall we?
Yeah.
Shall we? Let's.
97.2 Radio Reverb.
Hello, if you've just tuned in, this is the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM in the Brighton area, .com online. You can also listen to and join our famous podcast. We've got an amazing lady in the studio today. Her name is Anita Sullivan. She's a playwright and she's a positive voice speaker. And she recently won an amazing award. And I'm going to invite Anita in, and she's going to hopefully tell us all about it, and we're going to have a chat about it. Welcome, Anita.
Hi, Sue. Hello.
I hope that wasn't too much of an introduction, but I thought it was well worth saying everything that you deserve, that, you know. So the name of the play, okay, the name of the play was End of Transmission. Do tell us, our listeners, what that was all about, and what was your inspiration?
Wow. Okay. Well, as a positive voices speaker, I'm someone that lives with HIV, and I have been for 27 years.
Wow.
Something like that. Living well since 2001.
Right.
Undetectable and can't pass it on.
Wonderful.
Now, we have this target of 2030 for ending transmission in the UK, and it is possible, medically possible. The barriers are around stigma. So a little background to me, I am a radio drama writer, so that's my background. So I had the platform to be able to do something about sharing information about what it's like living with HIV now, and also the history of HIV, because it's bigger than we think. Mm. It's 100 years. It crosses the globe. There's not a country on earth that doesn't have HIV in its population. But often the stories that we hear about HIV are fragments. They are told from a particular perspective at a particular time in a particular place. And it's very hard to see how that timeline connects. And it's very hard to understand the journey that we've traveled from first jump, we believe, was in the First World War, to today, where we've gone from a virus that was unknown to one that was identified, to one that could be treated with medication, and then treated with medication that could be tolerated. Those are two big steps.
Mm, yes.
And where we are now, which is the can't pass it on message. So it was about telling that story. And the challenge was to do it on radio in 1 hour, 100 years in 1 hour.
That must have been a flipping challenge, getting everything in within an hour.
Huge. It's such an enormous story. And obviously I couldn't fit in the whole world, but I wanted to start from first transmission in Central Africa. And the more you look at it, the more it's a colonial story. I can come back to that, but it is. I also, to sort of compress the story in one way, there's different strains of the virus, and basically one went one way around the world and the other went the other way around the world. So I decided to follow just one journey. Mm-hmm. So we go from Democratic Republic of Congo in the 50s. We go to Haiti. We go to Los Angeles and San Francisco. We go to New York. We travel to London and to Edinburgh. And on that journey, we travel with the virus, and it's the virus that's telling us the story. So that's the sort of, he's the only character that could tie all that time and all those places together. So, and the human side of the story is, why is the story being told? Well, it's based around a woman called Jude who's been living with HIV for quite a while. But like many of us living with HIV, she doesn't exactly know how she got it.
Mm-hmm.
But the virus does know. So she stops taking her medication in order to talk to her virus and ask him. And he doesn't want to tell her that. He wants to eke out the story as long as possible because he wants to stay, her to stay off the medication and for him to mm-hmm. have a voice. So he tells the whole story, not just her part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the vehicle for it. So it's a very long answer to a short question, but ask me another one.
No, I've listened to it and it was just an amazing, I mean, I learned something. I mean, I thought I knew a lot about HIV and I really learned some really great informative information listening to End of Transmission. And I recommend anyone, I know you're going to give out the details at the end where people can still, you know, get to hear it, which is great. So, I mean, how long in the planning was this?
It was quite a big deal, actually. There was a lot of research that went into this, mm-hmm. a lot of reading, a lot of watching videos and listening to testimonies. But also, I was in a really interesting position because being one of Positive Voices speakers, I hear people's stories all the time.
Yeah.
And we're an amazing bunch of people. The Positive Voices are so diverse, not just in terms of demographic,
mm-hmm.
but also our different experiences of living with the virus, our different feelings about that, where it's taken us. So that I had that amazing access to those different stories. And I should thank I asked for volunteers and I took the first seven people who signed up and said yes, and there was no judgment about that. So a thank you to SA, Mary, mm-hmm. Stephen, Alan, Tim, Neve, and Jess, and who have I forgotten? I've forgotten one. Oh, I'm in it too, but that was an accident.
just to remind our listeners, Anita, Positive Voices speakers are is a project which is all under the Terence Higgins Trust, and we do an immense amount of work in our Brighton schools and colleges and universities and workforce. So, that was great that you were able to have access to those people's stories
it's an amazing piece of footage to gather, actually. I remembered Roland. Sorry, Roland. I've actually got my poor producer, Karen Rose at Sweet Talk Productions. I came up with about 5 hours worth of content from the Positive Voices speakers. And because of the scale of the story we were telling, and we only had an hour, we only had 5 minutes for actual real time of a Positive Voices speaker in the middle of this drama.
Uh-huh.
So we've got these amazing recordings, which are testimonies of people living well with HIV now. Mm. And that's quite a particular thing. And I want to do some more with that footage. It's really great.
How did you break those? Because all those recordings you've done and you had to choose. How did you say, I want that bit or and I can't have that? I mean, how did you go about doing that? Sort of trying to just get segments of all that great footage that you got?
Well, do you know what? First of all, it was about interviewing with a purpose. So I wanted people to tell me about their relationship with their virus. Everyone's mm-hmm. Sort of vision of how the virus is in their body, how they feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the stuff that we don't talk about enough, actually. Mm-hmm. We have a passenger And it's with us for life because there's no cure, no vaccine. So how do we live with this other being? And I sort of had a rough idea where those might fit into the play, the different questions, but it was Karen that made all the decisions. She made the choices about how to weave that into the drama. Mm-hmm. And some of it is extraordinary. There's a very, very strong piece at the end where one of our speakers has a conversation with the virus across an edit. It's just so moving. No spoilers though.
No, because we want people to, as many people as possible, to listen to End of Transmission. So it was finished. It was ready to go live. When was the first date it went live? I'm trying to remember.
Oh, goodness, you've got me. It's, I think it was July last year. Uh-huh. Around then. I could do some digging around on.
So
that was a BBC Radio 4 live broadcast was then, right. and it also was available on Sounds and iPlayer, mm-hmm. Which mm-hmm. it still is. That's still up.
Great. So from then, so how did it get put forward to end up having this amazing? I mean, what happened? You know.
Well, the BBC commissioning system is way too complicated for a half-hour programme. But in Precy, I said, what about this, to my producer, Karen. She's an independent producer in Brighton, right. At Sweet Talk. And producers have access to the BBC commissioning system. She right. put it forward and we got a green light. We got go. Sounds simple, but there's a whole pitching process around it. But that's where we got to, and then it was a case of making it, and also making it exactly that 1 hour to fit into the BBC's schedule. No swearing, no violence. Well, there is a bit of swearing and violence, and then clearing all the music rights, which I won't even go there. That was very difficult. So that was the producer's role in it, and how it happened. Right. Casting was again, that was my producer's job, and we did end up with a lovely cast. The virus was played by David Haig, who's mercurial, just as you want him. David Carlisle, who's also in It's Sim, and uh-huh. Lou Brealey, who people might know from Sherlock, and a lot of other stuff. So they were fabulous, and then we had a whole, so there's so many voices in this drama if you mm-hmm. include the positive voice speakers and the other actors involved as well.
So when did you know it was being put forward for an award?
I think I don't know, really. There was a sort of nominations process that happens, right. and then there's a short list,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
long list, and then there's a short list, and then you get an invitation to come. At right. which point, you know that you're one of the three names in the envelope, but you don't know if you've won.
Right. Okay.
So this was for the BBC Radio Drama Awards, and mm-hmm. End of Transmission actually won two awards that night. It won the Best Single Drama, which is the kind of team one, made the producer and all the actors and the sound engineer and David Thomas. Mm-hmm. But I also won the Tinniswood Award for the Best Drama Script. So that's an important one for me as a playwright.
Absolutely. Gosh. Your family must be so proud of you, Anita.
It's funny.
Being the person you are, you're not going to say that.
Funny enough, my dad is very hard of hearing, and he doesn't really appreciate my career in radio drama. So I have to send him scripts to read, and that's how he accesses mm-hmm. what I'm doing. But yeah, they were very proud.
Your dear husband, I bet he's over the moon for you.
He is. Yeah, yeah. He was very excited. He didn't get to come to the award ceremony, which was a bit sad. We had phones off during the event, so I was just texting at the end. So, I got two.
Oh, my goodness.
I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it.
So I'm just thinking. So
I was just pausing there because there was dog action.
Okay. Not tomorrow. I'll get Josh to cut that. But I'm just thinking, where are you going to go now? I mean, obviously, that's what you do for a living. So have you got anything, not that you're going to give anything away, but have you got any exciting things on the agenda for the future?
I have, actually. I've got a theatre commission, which is a lovely thing, for a touring theatre production with New Perspectives Theatre. I think I'm allowed to say that. I've signed the contract and I've been paid, so it must be official. Then, it's called Model Village, and it'll be touring in October. And I've got a radio drama commission, a serial which we're probably, with Karen Rose again, which we'll probably be working on towards the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really exciting.
Brilliant. And just before we forget, so people listening in, where can they actually go on and get End of Transmission? We want to make sure that everyone gets access to it. So how can they go about locating that?
Okay, it's available on BBC iPlayer and BBC Sounds, and if you type in End of Transmission, you should find it. Weirdly, I don't think if you type in HIV on Sounds, it doesn't come up, which is a bit of a flaw. Mm-hmm. But do that. And my name's Anita Sullivan, which might help the search as well.
Yeah.
Actually, if you search for me, you'll find my website, which has got a blog about how we made it as well.
Oh, brilliant. Great. Gosh. No, I mean, it's just amazing. And it's great that you're local. I mean, and we say this all the time. We've got so much to amazingly shout about within Brighton. We've got so much amazing initiative with HIV. And one of the things we always talk about, you know, we've got those testing machines for HIV, you know, the vendor machines that London haven't even got yet, you know. And I don't think some people really realise what an amazing city that we live in, you know, Brighton and Hove, and the just so amazing, you know. I mean, we should be really thankful. Oh yeah, Brighton, and you know what goes on in Brighton, but actually quite a lot. And hey, look, we've got another thing I always bang on about, Anita, is, you know, the HIV Out is the only radio show in the UK dedicated to HIV. I mean, London have got all of the community radio stations you could think about, but it's nothing about HIV. So, yeah, very proud and so pleased that, you know, what has happened in your journey, and it seems like you're going to be doing more and more exciting things to come. I mean, and just on the last thing, obviously, you see, you've been diagnosed, was it 27 years? Did you really say 27?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, 27, 28.
You did.
The math, but yeah.
I mean, just as yourself as a person living 27 years, I say that again because, would you have ever thought you would have had the journey you've had now if you thought back pre-diagnosis?
Well... It's interesting. I was living in a different city. I'm so far away from the person I was then in many ways. But as you'd hope life would be a journey, right? So I suppose the interesting part of that is I probably wouldn't have thought that I'd be a radio writer. I was very much a theatre writer at that time. Here's career advice. If you want to embark on a new career, the best thing to do is to find someone who's an expert in that and then be very rude about the media that they work in, because that's exactly what I did with Karen Rose. I was introduced to her in a pub in Brighton in 2000,
right,
when I was a hardcore hardcore theatre writer and didn't like radio. And I told her how much I hated radio drama, which, and to her immense credit, she said, well, write me something better. And that
and you took that challenge on.
Did, and that was my first radio drama with her. So, but it came from a place of absolute honesty.
Yeah.
So it's no going back from that. But 2000 was also a bad year for me because that was I was diagnosed at that point and I was really, really ill. Yeah. So I nearly wasn't here at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was a sort of 3 months intensive hospital journey and then a 6 month recovery afterwards. It was not small.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons that I'm involved with Positive Voices is that there's no need for anyone to experience what I experience now.
Absolutely not.
We can stop transmission. And if transmission occurs, we have everything in the toolkit to stop people getting sick, so people can live well with it.
Absolutely.
And don't need to be ashamed either.
Absolutely.
So that's my journey. And it was an educational journey as well, because I come from the generation of the Don't Die of Ignorance
campaign. Yes, those leaflets. Getting popped through. Do you remember the leaflet getting popped through your letterbox, Anita?
I don't remember the letterbox moment, but I do remember reading it and I took it seriously. Yeah.
Yeah.
I used condoms.
Yeah.
And then at some point I didn't. And as a result, I nearly did die of ignorance. And how embarrassing and stupid would that have been?
Anita, you're amazing, and I'm sure many, many people have told you that. And I feel so proud to know you outside of, obviously, you know, within a Positive Voice speaker situation. I feel totally proud that, you know, you're part of what we're trying to do within the Tone Seeking Trust, but what you're individually, personally trying to do. You know, and I really commend you for that. And I just really want to thank you for coming on to the HIV Hour today, you know, and what an amazing thing you've done. And
well, it's Positive Voices that have given me the confidence to do it, I must say. It's because I feel like I've got a team at my back. I feel really honoured to be amongst such a crowd of people who've been on such interesting, different, difficult, empowering, inspiring journeys and you know, kind of found my people a bit late in life, but I found them.
exactly. You know what? You're going to have to come on again, Anita, and tell us what you're doing in the future, and you know, keep us updated. That would be amazing. Would you do that for us?
Yeah, I'd be glad to.
Thank you so much, Anita, and thank you from the HIBR for coming on today.
Thanks for having me. Radio Reverb.
Have you heard Anita end of transmission?
Yeah, darlings, no. I'm going to have a look at it tonight.
She's having a conversation with the virus, and the virus, to figure out where the virus has come from. Mm-hmm. And you make automatic assumptions as a listener as to where she got the virus from, but it sort of confounds you and tricks you, and you realise that there's no typical way of catching HIV. It's a surprising twist and turns.
You guys know her story?
I don't know if it's actually her, but she's written it as a person having a conversation.
Oh, okay. I met her years ago from Project 100, and she's such an inspiring lady. She really is.
Yeah, she's been living with HIV for 20 years, so.
So what a packed show that was.
Oh, that was a lovely show.
It was. It's
so quick sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, we've
got. We're all sat in our living rooms doing it, isn't it?
we've become so much pros doing this now, haven't we? We've got a full faces of everyone on, you know, all the presenters for the first time in a long time, which is quite nice. And
I mean, we've been back in the studio, I think, but I think because we had these two big interviews, I thought we'd get to come together, and we'll just it's just good time together. So yeah, thank you for tuning in tonight. And
yes,
good luck, Tony, on Saturday.
Yes. Oh, yes, good luck. We'll be all writing for you. Mm-hmm.
The silver boob tube, and yeah, that'll be me wheeling my little backside round London. Yes.
Oh. Hey. Good
luck. And good night, everyone. And see you next time.
Yeah. Bye. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news, and views on living positively with the virus.